You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land, and thank you for listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I'm here with a very special guest, one action star, Caleb Porter. Caleb, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you for joining me, Caleb. We are here for a very special episode. This is actually a new section of our podcast we're going to be calling Tub Talks. What is Tub Talks, you might ask? Well, it's kind of like TED Talks, but in a bathtub. So basically how it works is I am in my bathtub with my Epsom salt, soaking, relaxing, nice hot bath. And Caleb is doing the same from his location, taking a nice hot bath. And we are discussing all things comic books and pop culture related, basically. But today, for the inaugural episode, the very first episode of Tub Talks, we're going to be talking a fair amount, about underwater or water-based comic characters, which I thought would just be a hoot. Oh, man. Like, so cool. So thank you for joining me on this ridiculous endeavor, sir.
Yeah, I'm happy to be the first rubber ducky reader.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. Let me just grab my...
I gotta be honest, like, the underwater underwater heroes aren't really my thing. I feel, if it's possible, they're kind of stale as far as, like, storylines.
They very much are. Underwater heroes aren't really anybody's thing, to be honest. Like, not much anymore.
They really aren't.
When they mentioned an Aquaman movie back in Entourage for HBO back then.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, the Jeremy Piven starring, like, show. It was laughable. Everybody, you know, it was written to be a joke. And lo and behold, 2018 comes around and we have an Aquaman movie. Like,
yeah,
how crazy
but,
is that?
I mean, it's like when I don't know, an organism has to kill everybody else to stay alive, you know? Because
yeah.
Like we got the badass Jason Momoa, so it was basically like Lobo underwater, you know?
Yeah,
like, this wasn't, you know, parted to the side, you know, Arthur Curry Aquaman, you know, like this is like a biker basically underwater.
Yeah,
you know, the changing times, you know.
You're 100% correct. I would say this is probably the closest adaptation to Peter David's run from the 90s, like, 96, 97, somewhere around there, I think? 95, maybe?
Yeah. I love that artist on those, too. I think his name's Marty Eglund.
Yeah, him and there's another dude, too. I can't remember his name now.
He looks like Waringo?
I know Daryl Banks, I believe was his name. He wrote her, like, he drew a few issues here and there, if I recall. But he was primarily over on Green Lantern. But I can't remember the guy's name. I got him to autograph, like, to sign one of the Aquaman comic books, actually. I think the number one issue, like, from Peter David's run. But now I can't remember his name.
Huh.
I'll have to look that up.
I'm, like, racking my brains. Like, I think there was a guy named Kirk Javrin.
Let's see.
Yeah, this probably isn't the best radio, but there was a Jim Calafiore, I think.
That's it.
For a little bit.
That's it. Jim Calafiore. He signed my book.
Yeah, I was
that's
thinking of it because it's like, wow, you're so close to California. Like,
yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I swear with like the underwater comic books, you know, it's so disconnected from us because like, you know, duh, they're underwater. But like, you know, it's always like the three storylines where... You know, we're going to overthrow the surface dwellers or whatever. And
uh-huh.
There's an ecological disaster somewhere happening. Or my favorite one, you know, some primordial enemy is coming up through, like, the Marianas Trench or something. And you got to battle it back. And you're, like, the buffer between.
You know? Oh, yeah.
And I think that kind of covers it. Besides, like, you know, stupid, like, royalty subplots as far as Atlantis.
But, right. You've got the Kraken of the week, and then you have all of the you know, what's really fun is to get political on comics. So, yeah, then you have all the you know, heir to the throne type discussions and arguments and complications with that, and that can only take you so far. But one thing
I think we all gave Peter David a really good pass, you know, like I would not be reading any Aquaman if it wasn't for Peter David.
Right. So, I mean, he took his hand like right out of the bat. So, you know, right out of the gate, like he took his hand. So that's a big
What was that, like shit? Piranhas, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think it was like Piranhas or something. So yeah, it was like a total kind of a mind fuck for a young kid, you know, like wow. You know, Aquaman's, and then he replaced it with like a hook. So he's basically like Scorpion from Mortal Kombat.
Well, yeah. Well, first it was rudimentary, and he was basically like, you know, an Ahab kind of archetype. And then it got the magical hook qualities, where he could be like Scorpion. And
then I think it was like
over here.
Bill Willingham eventually started writing it, if I recall, although I could be wrong. And then he created like an elemental water hand.
You know what? That sounds right.
That sounds like in his wheelhouse, so we'll just say it was Bill Willingham that did that. But if it's not,
you know, I feel like Aquaman is kind of like, in a way, kind of like Marvel's Daredevil, as far as like people just really want to put their stamp on that character, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it's had a pretty notable amount of writers on that, you know, like Jeff Johns for a little bit. There's a gentleman I like named Will Pfeiffer that wrote it like in the early aughts.
Yeah, I remember that. He also wrote that Dial H for Hero, if I recall.
Yes! Good job!
Yeah, I like that.
That with that amazing artwork from that veteran guy.
Yeah.
God, I hope this podcast doesn't turn into like, who was that guy?
It always does with me, though.
That amazing artist that came back for the Shazam series for a little bit. I want to say like Daryl something.
You're not talking about Ordway, are you?
No, not Ordway.
Because Ordway did some of the covers for the like Shazam and stuff, and then the interiors, I think, too. And that was like 90s/2000.
Hours after this podcast over with.
Of course. I think it was the 90s, though, that he was doing it, so I don't know.
Yeah.
What the shit did line up? I think the one saving grace that we have with Aquaman is a little known fact that not a lot of people know, and that's the appearance of a particular character. He appeared in 1956 in Adventure Comics number 229. That is the sidekick to Aquaman, Topo.
What's his name?
Topo. T-O-P-O. Wow. Topo. Now, Topo is a sentient octopus, or basically just a regular octopus, because octopuses are pretty sentient. They're intellectual as
well. Oh, they're alive. They exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen it outside of pictures, but, you know, it would have to be a really big conspiracy to keep this lie up for me.
Right? So, I mean, even as far as, like, just recently, they were doing this not too long ago. They did this series called Resident Alien with Alan Tudyk.
Okay.
And he was an alien from outer space that was kind of hiding undercover on Earth in a small town in Colorado. And he went to like a sushi place, and there was an octopus in water there that they were going to obviously like cook. And he walked up to the tank and started having a conversation with him, because apparently those aliens are descendants of octopi.
Ooh.
So
I just want to take a quick side detour and say that Alan Tudyk, whatever, he is slowly but surely like building his resume for like an all-time, you know, kind of like prestige.
I mean, as far as like his ability to mimic and create, like he does a lot of that motion capture shit too.
Yeah.
Like, he was that robot in iRobot, you know? And then he's been, he was that droid in, what was that, Rogue One? He was the droid that everybody hated to love or loved, I guess.
It's like, so, yeah. It's not just Andy Serkis. Like, there's another guy.
Nope, it's not Andy Serkis, and it's not just James Gunn's brother or whatever his name is. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you know, so let's go to the other side of the thing. I know you're Mr. DC, but what do you have to say about Namor? Like, they're, you know.
Man, You know, like, it's interesting because Namor is, like, Marvel's first superhero, basically. Marvel Comics' superhero ever. So it's hard to diss that. It's like trying to talk shit about Superman. I don't like to do it.
Right.
And that's just because it's the first thing out of the gate what they tried to do. I mean,
yeah.
Marvel Comics number one was cover dated October of 1939. But his character was created before that. His character was created for a book called Motion Picture Funny Weekly.
Was that under the Timely banner?
Yeah, Timely? Under the Timely banner. But it did not appear in there because I don't know specifically why. I guess they just decided not to do it. And so they decided to put him in Marvel Comics number one. So it's really hard to talk smack about it. But one thing I did not know, however, is that his name isn't just Namor the Submariner or Prince Namor. He's got a last name. He's got the same last name of a famous dog that loved to sell beer.
Mackenzie?
Yep.
Whoa!
His full name is Namor Mackenzie. Yeah. Like, what the shit?
That's pretty wild.
That really rocked my world. Now, it was the creator of Namor. He was created by Bill Everett. He both wrote and did the art, which is kind of rare for back then, to be honest. Because there were always teams, you know, you always had teams. It wasn't until like you got into like the really independent books of like the 60s and 70s, you know, underground shit, or like the indie, you know, Eclipse Pacific books and stuff of the 80s that you started seeing that more and more and more. But, you know, for this in the 30s, you know, this was like pretty groundbreaking for me, you know, and probably for a lot of other people, too.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely stuck because, you know, Bill Everett's style was he kept that triangle head for Namor. And that was, like, pretty much replicated, like, all through the 60s by, you know, Kirby, whatever. Like, he always had that triangle head, you know?
Yeah. When he first appeared in a Fantastic Four comic, exactly the same, basically. So I think it was a great homage that they did to Bill Everett for him for doing that. You know, obviously they didn't bring him in on that loop when it came to Fantastic Four, but it was nice that they, you know, did the homage for that and gave him, you know, a little credit there.
It's crazy how pop culture kind of like moves the boats, you know, pun intended.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like Namor, like, you know, it's the joke Aquaman, like, you know, go fucking talk to some fishes, you know, like, or some fish, you know, you're lame, you're stupid. Mm-hmm. But like Submariner, you know, Namor, just by like people not knowing about him, he kind of missed all that, you know, even though he was first, you know? So it's just interesting that he was always there, but, like, he always gets the, like, I'm going to steal your girl, you know, from Mr. Fantastic, you know? He never
That's like his
like,
shtick.
The dork underwater.
An underwater horn dog is, like, his shtick permanently. And he has no sidekick.
He has the attitude to prove it.
Right, and he has no sidekick octopuses, so... I mean, you know, it's cool. I love that, like, he's so arrogant. I think that's great. You know, that's definitely a trait that they're going to have to keep for him if they put him in a film, which they will. They will.
It's got to happen.
And let me just ask you, do you have the first appearance of Namor? Just lying around?
I do not, no.
No? Oh, okay. All right, because I don't either, and I don't have the extra million or 2 million, whatever it costs now, to buy that book. So... I'm never going to own it, but what I do own is 3 or 4 copies of Namor number 1 from the 90s. So
I have
rich.
One copy. You're talking the John Byrne, right?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, I'm rich, motherfuckers.
That's what's up.
Finally, I have enough money to buy.
If I'm not wrong, like that's one of those covers that gets kind of swiped every now and then, right?
Yeah.
He's like coming up out of the water.
It totally does. Yeah. Of course it does.
I know Byrne likes to kind of swipe himself with some of his classic, you know, Superman covers. But, like, I've seen that Namor pose with, like, you know, Human Torch on a cover.
Yeah. And let's be honest, they're not doing it out of, like, oh, this is for sentimentality or whatever. It's just probably to save time, you know, as like, for swiping your own work. You're just really retooling it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you're taking the basic forms and retooling. So it's fine.
Yeah, it's like the first one was a mulligan. Like, I can kind of like rejigger this and maybe get it right. Which, right. I mean, it's always fun. Like,
yeah,
being an artist, you got to be pretty self-referential anyway, you know, because that's what it's all about, right? Getting your name out there.
Right. Absolutely. So let's quickly go over, because we all know Aquaman's abilities, but I wasn't so sure on Namor's. So I'm just going to go over a quick list of things that he can do, and then we can discuss, because I'm quite enamored with this. I'm quite puzzled by some of these.
I see what you did there.
So so he has aquatic adaptation, which of course is duh. I mean, he can breathe underwater. We get that. He's got superhuman strength, speed, agility, senses, and reflexes. He has mild invulnerability due to, you know, being under the pressure of underwater. You know, that makes sense. He has flight.
Yeah, and it also excuses why he doesn't come out looking like a prune every time.
Yep, very true.
You know, that skin's very resilient.
Very. He also has flight via tiny little wings on his ankles, which
I was hoping you'd say that. Yes.
At some point, they got rid of and then brought back and then got rid of and then brought back. So those wings disappear very often.
I feel like it was Wizard Magazine or something. Or it might have just been like the Namor letters column or something. But I remember somebody was asking if like those wings on the ankles are just for show because they couldn't possibly support his weight. And then the editor or whatever being like, well, no, those are what make him fly. And just be like, no.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you shut your mouth? It is what makes him fly, you son of a bitch. Meet me after school.
It's so funny, like, when normies, you know, kind of, like, see an aspect of our comic book culture that we've, you know, long ago, like, suspended our disbelief over. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And then we make fun of somebody or something else.
A little off topic, but I was playing a video game on my phone, and Black Bolt. From the Inhumans was on there.
Uh-huh.
And my roommate was looking over my shoulder and he's like, does that guy have a tuning fork in his head?
Yes, he does.
How ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's really ridiculous. But I will say, when I was looking at getting, I was like, should I get a first Inhumans or a first Black Bolt? Even though there's so many characters in the Inhumans, and that first Inhumans appearance would have been a lot of characters, and it might have been the smarter purchase, I was like, fuck it. I got to get first Black Bolt because he's just so ridiculous. So that's what I ended up doing. I got first Black
Bolt. Donald. Okay, why don't you, for the folks at home, why don't you drop back Black Bolt's real name?
Oh, well, should I say it like he does?
No, we don't want the world to explode. But, you know, I mean, if you could do it in whisper, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, okay, I can whisper it. It's interesting because for those that don't know, Black Bolt can't really speak. If he does, basically, the whole world kind of, he could basically, he could destroy the world with his voice, in other words. He has this
size. Yeah, Black Bolt was doing the ellipsis as an answer way before manga got a hold of it.
Right. But his alter ego, so to speak, his other name he goes by, it's Blackagar Boltagon. Yes.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, it's definitely
like,
it.
Why did they do that?
Well, you heard the giant sigh before I said it, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, why did they do that?
Boltagon.
Like, that's so ridiculous. Like, if somebody has to tell a newbie that with a straight face, you know, guy with a tuning fork in his head, and he's like so powerful. Like, he's ridiculous. He's like so uber powered. You know, he's like easily.
Blackagar Boltagon. Duh.
Blackagar Boltagon.
And he's fighting Namor McKenzie tonight. What?
Jeez.
What a weird...
Comics, you have to love them, because if you don't love them, then you're not here, you know?
Correct, yeah. So to continue on with his powers for Namor, getting back to that...
Sorry about that.
That's okay. He's got telepathic control over sea creatures, Here's a great one. It's longevity. So I think they're talking about in the bedroom. And he has
an Atlantean secret, huh?
He's telling Sue Storm all the time, I've got long
longevity. He's telling her what's up.
Baby, longevity. And then there's hydrokinesis, which we understand he can, like, manipulate water, I guess, to a point, which is...
Yeah, okay. Isn't that like the Wonder Twins, like, shape of a whatever, you know?
Yeah, kind of. Well, he also has the ability to copy the powers of oceanic life forms, so...
Whoa.
Like... He could eat the eggs of his young, I guess. I don't know. Like he's got.
Dude, you don't want that guy around your morning eggs.
Yeah, got some good powers there. I invited Namor for lunch, and he just kept eating my eggs.
You know, Donald, I gotta say, like it really is a testament to Namor's arrogance that he can try and big time on somebody's wife. When the husband has the power to stretch his body parts?
Yeah.
Like, dude, how are you getting under this guy's skin? You
know? Right, right.
Like, that's insane.
He can expand parts, too. Let's be clear on that. He can lengthen and expand parts. And we're talking about Mr. Fantastic, for those that don't know, a.k.a. Reed Richards from the Fantastic.
Yeah, a.k.a. everybody's thought about this when they were in sixth grade.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah, but, like, this guy is getting, like, what's the word, cucked? and then Sue is like, okay, this person that lives underwater and doesn't really follow the customs, but he's just so handsome.
Right.
Like, you got, like, nothing in common with this guy.
He's a prince. What can I say? He's a prince.
Yeah, there's that prince title, man.
And what does that tell you other than the age-old story about a woman just wanting a man for his money? I mean...
You hate to see it.
Yep, you hate to see it. It's true. So, two more here. He has bodily water generation, which I don't know what the fuck that means. Like
he doesn't have to have a Gatorade to rehydrate?
I guess, or he can just continuously urinate without... having to drink anything. I don't know.
You know, that kind of sounds like the fourth storyline for these underwater guys. You know, the cliffhanger where they've been out of water for too long?
Yeah, or like how they can kill somebody by just continuously pissing in their mouth until they die.
Oh, Garth Ennis.
Yep. He's going to weld some dogs and then piss in your mouth. Yeah, weld some dogs to him first.
I then swear, like, Wizard Magazine was just a playground for Garth Ennis when he was coming up. Like,
oh, yeah.
I think Dog Welder was, like, the number one hero of the year for their, like, little, annual contest.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. And we were just talking about, on another podcast, we were talking about the other guy that, like, he gets his power by, like sexually harassing and molesting men, if I recall.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck?
Sir Bueno.
That's it. Sir Bueno, yeah. Well, Jesus.
Dude, you need to, I'm sure you have, but you need to get the Hitman versus Lobo comic book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you read that?
I haven't read it, but I'm well aware of it, and I really do want to read it. I just never got around to it.
Oh, like this. So this is in like one of your 50 stacks of comic books. You just have to find it, or it's, back in Ohio.
That's the problem. It's either back in Ohio or I don't have it at all. So
okay. All right.
That's a hard one because I only got the CLZ app recently.
Like, if you know everything that happens in that, like, I'm not going to say anything, but it's like Garth Ennis has a way of just like pissing all over any hero you might like. Or any character, like, he just makes them ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a lot of fun regarding, trolling Lobo.
And Lobo's a fun one to troll, let's be real. Superman did it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not hard to troll Lobo, but it's dangerous.
Oh, I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You think I want to get fragged?
Yeah. Now, did you know that, like, the Submariner... did you know he wasn't originally, like, he's Marvel's first mutant is what they say, but I don't think he was originally coined a mutant until a little...
Oh, no way. Yeah. I don't even think that term existed, right?
Yeah, I don't think it exists until the X-Men, and then at that point they were like, oh yeah, Namor's a mutant too.
Yeah, but I think they're doing that thing like because he was born that way.
Yeah.
They get really loose with the mutant things.
You know? Yeah, and then like they didn't have the rights in film to the X-Men like for the longest time, so they were trying to make everybody that was a mutant basically a inhuman then.
And oh, that, God, that was the biggest, like, fall on their face.
Wow.
I didn't even watch the Inhuman show because I was so insulted by the prospect of, like, okay, I can grant even now, like, I don't really need to read a Wolverine story for the rest of my life. Like, I got the character. You know, I love it. I don't really need any more of it. But for them to have the balls to think, oh, yeah, we'll just throw Wolverine away. You're going to like these Inhumans. Like, shame on you, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Shame on Disney for doing that, because you know that was their decision. Serious. Had to be. They were like, well,
the whole bait and switch with fucking the X-Men. Are you kidding me? Yeah. That was ridiculous.
No, thank you. No, thank you. So let's quickly run over a couple more underwater characters. I've got a couple pulled up here. Let's talk a moment about Stingray. Now, he's a fascinating. Yeah. Apparently, he killed Steve Irwin. I did not know this, but too soon.
Right in the heart.
It's too soon, isn't it? Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry, everybody.
Like William Tell on that one.
Yeah. He's an oceanographer, like an experienced oceanographer, a skilled inventor of oceanographic equipment. He's very smart. He has an exoskeleton battle suit that's for underwater, like, durability and swimming and you know.
Donald,
like,
this is the red and white one, right? Like, he doesn't he has, like, a blank mask face.
Totally. He looks like he should either be in an anime film or part of the Alpha Flight, but he's neither.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Okay, I just had to go through my ocean... Like, I'm thinking, like, Tiger Shark? No, he's a villain. He's actually kind of cool. But, yeah, Stingray, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So he basically gets a suit, and he has his powers, and he, like, starts to help out Namor and stuff, and, you know, ingratiates himself more and more with the Avengers and things, up to the point where, you know, he's basically kind of they wanted to do a kind of a Hydro base to superhero team, the Avengers. They wanted to do something like that. And he was a part of that. And then he was a big part of the Armor Wars storyline, where Iron Man confronts, bless you, he confronts Stingray, mistakenly believing that Newell's suit was based on technology stolen from Stark Enterprises.
Wow. I've always heard, like, remember last time we talked, I did the Operation Galactic Storm? Like, Armor Wars is one of those storylines that just kind of sits there. Like, yeah. I don't know anything, because we don't really care about Iron Man, you know, or Thor.
I mean, unfortunately, in the 90s, when we were growing up, like, that's kind of a dead zone for Iron Man and Thor and things like that. There wasn't...
And throw in Submariner on that, definitely.
Yeah. There really wasn't anything that kind of drew you to the character. Even Daredevil, to be honest, Captain America, all of them were kind of languishing a bit. And, you know, it wasn't, honestly, if it was, I don't think if it was for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we'd still have some of these characters in print. You know?
I think that's very fair. Yeah. Like, you know, God, like Thor, what a weird sell, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, let's be honest, it's just like, what do they call that when it's a public domain? Like, Thor is a public domain character, you know? Like, even DC has a couple Thors running around, you
yep.
know? And then to make this work as, like, Marvel's Thor, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. To the point, so much to the point that nobody else even really wants to try anymore. You know what I mean? They're not, like, trying. But they did.
Yeah.
They did recently, I guess not so recent, it's been a while, it's been since like probably the like 80s, that Marvel created their own Wonder Woman, like low-key under the radar, and then rebrought that back out in like a Supreme Power run for the Marvel, I think it was their Max run.
Yeah, you're talking the character. Princess Power, right? For a Squad
yep.
Supreme?
You got it. Yeah, Princess Power. Yeah, she's basically just a carbon copy.
Straczynski.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
you know, the remake was by Straczynski, the Supreme Power. Great comic stories. Really, Gary Frank art, like some of the best stuff.
I picked up the first four issues to try it out. Really, just in my last purchase, and did not know.
There's a lot to like.
Yeah, so I'm stoked to read it, and the guy had all of them, so I don't know if anybody's going to want issue five on. So I can always go back to the well and grab those, you know, from him if I decide I love it, which I probably will.
Well, you know, if it comes down to it, give me your wish list, and I'll just do that. You know, take a picture from my phone and just give you a data dump.
Yeah. That sounds good. So basically, Stingray is an underwater kind of a Iron Man in a way. He's an underwater Iron Man, and
okay.
I don't know if that makes him cooler or less cool. Probably less cool because he can't he's just so ingratiated in this underwater world that he's like Namor's. He's basically Topo for Namor.
It's so stupid because, like, it's definitely less than because, okay, this is a suit of armor, and if it's coming from Tony Stark, guess what? There's an electrical capability to it.
Well, so it doesn't.
How are you charging your
suit? It didn't come
from Tony Stark. How is any of this? It's like thing. Russian roulette anytime you hop in the ocean.
Well, here's the thing. It didn't come from Tony Stark. Tony thought it did.
Oh, right, okay.
But.
I fell right into it.
No, But it's fine because he has one of his things is he can project electrical bolts from his gloves.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Like, you come out of the water, are you instantly dry? Do you have to wait an hour to shoot these gloves off? What, you know?
Damn.
How does that work?
The whole underwater thing, like, it's just so counterintuitive to us. Because, we have to make all these weird allowances. Like, you know, they have to be super strong and they have to be super fast. Because otherwise, you know, throwing a punch underwater wouldn't work, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, talking, you know? How are they talking underwater?
Yeah. You need to tell your roommate friend about this character and his abilities because he'll have a field day with that.
I'll have to find that guy. Yeah,
100% sure.
It's so silly. Another underused ability by all these characters, and I guess maybe it doesn't really fit with Namor since he kind of has like the Spock thing going on, but the ability to never have your hair in your eyes coming in and out of the ocean.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, remember in the 90s, like in the mid-90s where Namor got a makeover and his hair grew long and he was like all savage Namor?
Yeah, that was Jay Lee.
Yeah, that was the best. Like, Savage Namor. And then he became even more primal for Sue Storm. And he was like, he just walked in to the Baxter building, and he was like, I'm pulling my dick out right now, walking into the building.
Yeah, it's those pheromones, baby.
Yeah, damn. Namor's walking full dick out into the building.
Dude, like, he's going hanging everybody. Me. He's going for it.
Yeah, like, he's tripoding this shit. Fuck.
Yeah, jumbo shrimp, man. Never been wrapped.
So one more thing, I guess one more character before we wrap this up. I just briefly want to talk about a character named Fathom. Now, not the Michael Turner Fathom. This is a Fathom created much earlier than the Michael Turner Fathom. We're talking about...
R.I.P.
Yes, R.I.P. to Michael Turner. We're talking about a first appearance in 1983 in the Justice Machine Annual from Texas Comics was the original publisher, later to be Comico Comics. Now, this was...
Okay, I've heard of Comico.
Surprisingly, or not surprising, since we know about the Aquaman Elemental Hand, this was created by Bill Willingham.
Oh, wow.
This character of Fathom, a.k.a. Becky Golden, was a debutante who fell off a boat and drowned. She then received various water-related abilities, as well as bright green skin and webbed fingers. And she was also
from
like the elementals, I guess. Who the fuck knows with this shit? She was able to convert her body entirely into sentient water and shoot high-pressure streams. So that's cool. You know, we've got the Bill Willingham sentient water and high-pressure stream shooting shit going on because he loves that. Plus, he's got this big woman because she's basically nude whenever she's underwater most of the time. So we've got that. And by the way, let me just preface this. Like, let me just state really quickly that Bill Willingham loves sexy ladies. Like, and I mean to the point where there were several issues called the Elemental Sex Specials. And I believe if I know there's at least three. And if I'm correct, and I believe I am, the first one had Fathom on the cover fucking a dolphin.
Wow.
Yep. Full on riding that bitch. She was nude on the cover, riding this dolphin into X.
So she's like underneath, like kind of like reverse.
She's like, they're both floating, like it looks like going up towards the surface, but she's like, he's like curved, I guess, and she's like mounted on him, but still kind of off of him.
Huh.
So her bits are on his bits, it looks like, and she's just, I'll take a picture later and show you, or you can look it up, because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time fathoming it. Oh, God.
Well done.
Throw the toaster in here.
Well done, sir. But so I'm looking through the issue because I own it, and I wanted to talk about it for this particular episode. But like in the back on one of the sex specials, it says, "Who is that girl? Why is her skin green? What is she doing with that dolphin? Where can I get one?" And it's showing the same picture of her nude riding this dolphin, like pinching her.
That's on the cover.
They're showing it in black and white. And underneath the picture, it says, "You'll be the talk of the beach when you wear this beautiful full color t-shirt." Available directly from Comico.
Yeah, and you will be the talk of the beach and probably the talk of like the drunk tank or whatever it is for being a menace to society.
And here's the best part. It's only available in large or extra large because...
Hey, they know their audience at least.
They know their audience, yes. All the big nerds are going to wear their extra large elemental dolphin fucking shirt out to the beach.
Oh, God. Yes. All right. This just kind of reminded me of it. You went to like San Diego Comic-Con like back in like the 90s and early aughts and stuff, right?
No, I didn't go till 2005, I think, or 2006 was my first year.
Oh man, that was like the last one I went to. Yeah, I mean, like, it really got hijacked by Hollywood. Well, anyway, one of the years there was like some sort of group, like they were like a boycott group or something.
Uh-huh.
They were all dressed in black. But then on their shirt, it says, "Marvel can suck my dick." And, like, this is like you know, a club that, like, got a booth one of these years. And I'm just thinking, like, you're a fucking scumbag. Like, I mean, you know, whatever. Marvel doesn't have the best track record. But, like, dude, there's children running around, you know? Like, there's people dressed like Sailor Moon. There's, like, little kids. And you have this fucking, like, just disgusting shirt for no reason. Wow. I don't know. It was like that's what the type of person that would wear the elemental dolphin fuck shirt. That's kind of what I picture in my head.
Yeah, it's great. I'm gonna send you the picture of the magazine clipping because that's the one I have really readily available on my phone. I'm gonna do that.
Okay, yeah, I want to see that. I just want to see the.
I'm gonna send it now. Yeah, I'm gonna send it now. You've got to see this. I gotta be careful.
Well, you ended us on a bang quite yeah. Early, so good job.
That I did, sir. That I did. Let's see, where are you at? Where are you at, dolphin fucker? There it is. Boom. Okay, here it comes.
I can already smell the tuna.
Oh my god. Oh my god. There's ladies listening to that. No, there probably is.
Oh, maybe right. One. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Well, maybe I mean, one. Two.
I'm in a bathtub talking about underwater heroes, so, you know, I am a virgin. So.
That, well. You know, hey, wait a minute. Dude, your girlfriend must be pissed.
Yeah, she's really pissed. She's very patient. You know, you'd think she was religious by waiting.
She's been waiting for marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And he never wants to be married, so I don't get it.
Yeah, what do we do?
Yeah. Well, I think on that note, we're gonna call it here. I'm starting to turn into a prune, I think. So.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Caleb, for humoring me in this ridiculous endeavor of our first ever Tub Talks.
Thank you again, Donald. There isn't anybody I'd rather go over the minutia of this garbage with than you. So thank you, and I'm game for whatever novelty stuff we have going on in the future.
Awesome. We're going to do an upside down episode at one point.
That'll be fun.
One where we're just skydiving and, you know, just yelling, oh shit, and then trying to talk comics. It'll be great. Yeah, great.
I'm down.
All right. Well, you can find Caleb at Disneyland. Am I correct?
I am back at Disneyland. COVID be damned. I'm making it happen.
Yeah. So. If you're ever out in Disneyland, just start screaming Caleb out loud wherever you're at, and he'll come find you.
Caleb signal.
Yeah, he'll get in a lot of trouble probably, so maybe don't do that. But you could try it, but don't. But you could, don't. That being said, you can find our podcast. We do a live podcast, usually on Mondays, 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, on the Rumble Spoon Productions page on YouTube Live there. You can find our audio podcasts. We usually put new ones out every Thursday or Friday, and they are on a whole host of streaming availabilities. We have YouTube. It's on YouTube. We have Spotify, iHeartRadio. We have Spreaker. We have Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and just a whole multitude of other ones that you can find us on. So please do seek us out. We always have a good time. Or at least we try to with these podcasts. And sometimes we do really silly stunts like this. So thank you for tuning in. And if we don't see you in the tub, I guess, anytime soon, perhaps we will see you at the comic shop. Thanks for joining, Caleb. Really appreciate it.
Ahoy!
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.